So part of the beauty of the Sugya of Hanukkah, beauty on many levels, is that the Sugyas, as we progress, they tie into each other. So every extra topic adds another layer that builds on the previous layer. And as you go through these two, three blocks, so they all double back on each other and add a little bit of insight into what we've seen before. So we've discussed now the Sugya of Kavsa Zakukla, Eina Zakukla. So now within that same passage, we know the Gemara brings up another issue. The Gemara says that maybe we shouldn't allow Shvach oils that we can't use for Shabbos. Maybe we shouldn't allow them for Hanukkah. And the conclusion is that we are allowed to use them for Hanukkah both during the week and on Shabbos. And the distinction between the two, as we saw, was the concern about using it during the week was if the oil's not so good, so then maybe it's going to go out and you're not going to relight it, and that's what we discussed at length until now. And the issue on Shabbos is that if we have these candles lit on Shabbos and you're able to use them for your personal purposes and they don't really light very well, then maybe we have to worry that you're going to be mechal Shabbos by tilting them. But the fact is, we allow them on Shabbos, and that seems to tell us that the position is asur l'hishtamesh l'ora. Right? And that's the position that our Gemara associates with Rav Zeira. That according to Rav Zeira, since he holds, and that's where our little letter is, on Chaf Alef Mejayis, Tzivos u'shmonim sh'amr chacham mei malikim ben b'shabbos, malikim ben b'chanukah, bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos. And the explanation is that that tells us two things. Kafsa lo zakukla and asur l'hishtamesh l'oros. That seems to be the conclusion of our Gemara. Rav Zeira's opinion, those two halachic conclusions that emanate from the fact that we're allowed to use these oils on Chanukah. Now, there is another major passage on Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph that we'll talk about a little bit in a few minutes that is necessary to understand also in conjunction with this sugya, but just what we'll mention very briefly, that the Gemara tells us on Chav Beis Amud Aleph that Amar of Yehud, Amar of Asi, Asur Lahartzos Mos Keneged Ner Chanukah, that we're not allowed to use the Chanukah candles to count coins. And the Gemara then records an objection to that. So Kam Risi Kameh de Shmuel. When Shmuel heard this, he said, Amarli, he responded to the one who said this, V'chiner Kedusha Yeshba. What, I can't count coins by the candles? You're telling me the candles are holy? There's Kedusha to the candles? Is that really the case? So Maskef Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef then responds that that's not necessarily going to mean anything, that we find also that we can't use other items and mitzvahs where there's not necessarily a function of Kedusha, and he talks here about Kisui Hadam, he quotes the Pasuk, and he makes the point that there is a concept of Shelo Yehu Mitzvos Bezuyos Olav, that we want to abstain from Bizui Mitzvah, from doing anything that disgraces a mitzvah, and apparently this is in that category. And then the Gemara goes on to have a couple more comments about this, going to the next passage into Sukkah, so maybe we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow also, how that reflects on the regulations regarding a sukkah, and then goes on to discuss lighting one candle from the other, all within the heading of this issue of Bizui Mitzvah, that apparently there's some disrespect to the mitzvah shown if you're going to do certain activities while using the mitzvah item. So with those passages in mind, let's try to talk a little bit, what exactly is the nature of the Isser of using the Chanukah candles? Why do you have the Isser? You saw some of the Rishonim, you saw a few different views, and it's a little hard to say how many. Why is it hard to say how many? Because there are a few that you could group together, but maybe you shouldn't group them together. And we'll see that a little bit today, that some that seem like they could be grouped together maybe shouldn't be, and some maybe should be. So without trying to necessarily identify which Rishonim say which, what are some of the reasons that we see? Why? Yes, Ellie?
Hecker.
Okay, so to start off, that is the first one we see, right? So then which Rishon does say that? Rashi says that, right? So Rashi's view, we'll just stop and talk about that for a second. It's interesting, because to say it's a hecker, it's a little bit problematic, I think, just conceptually. Why is it a little bit problematic to say that we're prohibited to use it for a hecker? Anyone think of an issue there?
John? Lighting alone, no one's going to see it.
Okay, so maybe nobody will see if you're using it. No one will see, and therefore.
Only problem if someone sees you using it.
So he's saying, really, it won't be a hacker for anybody anyway. No one's going to see. So since it's not a hacker for anybody, so let's not worry about it. I was thinking maybe something a little bit on the other side of the fence of that issue. So I think, Shmuel, you go first. Oh, that's also interesting. Now, that there is some linkage here, right? One of the common threads between the two topics here, so the Gemara introduced them together, on the surface, they don't have an obvious connection, right? The question of Kavs Zakapla and Asr L'shtam L'shla'ora don't have an obvious connection, except that they're both relevant to the oils they use. But you're bringing up an interesting point, I think is what you're getting at, is that both of them address the question of, is there any relevance past the first second? Right? If we say that everything in the mitzvah is in the first second, then we could say that neither of these things should be issues. I shouldn't have to relight it because I did it the first second. And there should be no problem with using it because once I've already lit it, everything's over. So the whole idea that there's any relevance to the candles after they're already lit seems to connect to the Kavs Tzedakah sugya in that way, that both of them tell us that there's something going on even after the first second. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. Joe, you have a comment?
Couldn't you say that if you go that nobody's going to see them anyways, you might not even be fooling the Yerushalayim to begin with?
Yeah, that for sure could be an issue. We'll have to see exactly halach l'maisa how that plays out. But certainly, l'chachila, the takana is that it should be visible. So I was actually thinking of a problem really from the other side of that. Yosef?
I was going to say, it's a little broad to say Hecker. Hecker doesn't tell me, it could be Rashi's referring to both either because of Bizui or because of Kirsa Mitzvah, and that Hecker is just what the term he uses to tell you that there's an issue behind it, but he doesn't specify what that is. It should be distinguished.
So you're assuming that Hecker is connected to Bizui.
Or it could also be connected to Kirsa Mitzvah. I'm saying Rashi could be expanding everything. It's just a very broad term.
Right, so you're highlighting part of the issue, like I said, that especially some of these terms seem to be somewhat interchangeable, they seem to be somewhat fluid. We're not 100% sure what the scope of each phrase is, so it's a little bit hard to know who's agreeing with each other. So is Rashi interested in Bizui Mitzvah here? Is he talking about that at all? Many assume not, as we'll see, but we'll have to figure out exactly how that plays out. I'll tell you what bothers me about the Hecker idea is, Michael? Well, what bothers me is that a hecker is usually something active, right? Something positive. How do you have a hecker by not doing something? So what I said about the other side of the fence is that this, in order to call this a hecker, it means a hecker presumably being something positive, it means we're relying on people, Davka, watching you all of the time to see that you never use it. And that's a little bit hard to believe. Ellie?
It's an internal hecker.
Internal hacker for you.
Yeah.
So you're saying that you have a monitor that you know that since you never use it, therefore that keeps your attention on the fact that...
I mean, the fact that you're not able to use it, you have to think about that all the time.
So do you think that that's what Rashi is getting at, that it's a hacker for you? That basically the fact that you are not using it, when, every time you stop yourself from using it, that's going to remind you of the nature of the...
We were speaking of the comparison of the Rashi on the top of the page and the other Rashi. So
which other Rashi?
The Rashi of also the Shnei Mitzvah, or Rashi and Nikrishu in their mitzvah, right?
Right.
So, and then the one about the hecker of having an extra light, so those sound like two separate things. So maybe the one that you're not light is an internal hecker, and the one you have the extra light is an external hecker.
I was thinking something similar, but maybe it's all one line, that maybe since this ends up pushing you into having the shamish, that maybe the shamish is the hecker. Which is a little bit easier to say, right? That if you have this extra candle, this candle says your private use candle, basically, so then that serves as a hecker that the other candles are not. But if we didn't have the din of a shamish, it seems a little bit hard to say. You know, parenthetically, think about this, we get to Parshas Vayishlach. I always have a hard time conceptually understanding how the Gid Hanasha, some of the Mufarshim understand, that it's supposed to be a zikaron to what happened with Yaakov. It's clear from the Pesukim that it's connected, but that it's supposed to be a reminder of what happened to Yaakov in his battle with the Malach, but it's a very unusual type of hecker, right? Because it's something you don't do. Normally, if we wanted to remember something like that, we'd say, okay, we should eat something, we should eat matzah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. But to say that we should never come in contact with a good Anasha to remind us what happened with Yaakov, it's a little bit of an unusual type of a hecker. So to say we don't do something, it is a little bit difficult. And maybe it is, you put those two together again, to say once you get to the shamish, that maybe the shamish ends up serving as the hacker, which you're forced to have because you're not allowed to use the candles. It's also interesting, and Michael will take a question in a second, but part of one of the flowing in and out sugyas that come out here is we try to draw a parallel between Neiros Chanukah and Neiros Shabbos. That the Gemara is going to have more to say about. But here what's emerging, and of course the whole sugya started by comparing Neiros Shabbos and Neiros Chanukah, but this whole issue of Asur L'Hishtamesh L'Ora comes out that Neiros Shabbos and Neiros Chanukah are essentially mutually exclusive. Right? Because the whole point of Neiros Shabbos is Davka, to use them. That we need to have Neiros Shabbos so that we can see, and we'll have Oneg Shabbos, and we'll have Shalom Bayis, and everything else that the Gemara connects it to. And yet, Neiros Chanukah is the opposite. We're Davka not allowed to use them. Which ends up playing a role in a lot of practical halakhic questions. But essentially, the way it's emerging right now is that they're mutually exclusive. They have opposite functions. But it's just interesting, if we want to be medayik too much in Rashi, so I'm not too much in an excessive sense, but we're going to be medayik a lot in Rashi, so if Rashi is saying we can't use it because it's a Ner Shal Mitzvah, so does that mean Ner Shabbos are not Ner Shal Mitzvah? Is there a different kind of Ner Shal Mitzvah? It's a question to keep in mind as you progress with these comparisons. So I think it was Michael and Ephraim.
To me, Rashi was pretty clear, because later in the Amud he says Shemayata,
mm-hmm.
which would probably mean that it's not to do with Bizwood. It's because of it's rather connected to us really Shtamish.
Well, except that it comes out one step removed, that Rashi, because there, what the Gemara is saying is that since, according to the other possibility, you are allowed to use them, then we're concerned about Chilul Shabbos, that you'll tilt them and you'll do an act of Havar. But if we say that it's also L'Shamish Lora, then you're not going to come to use it or tilt it. So it connects really to a step removed. Right? Okay. So that's one issue. So let's try to keep in mind some points about that Rashi. That Rashi seems to say it's some kind of positive hecker, which is a little bit surprising because it's an absence of something. So to serve as the hecker, it would seem to be that you have to be watched a complete time for that to be effective. At this point, maybe it's an internal hecker is an interesting idea. The idea that maybe we should connect it to the Shamish, which then ends up being something visible, also I think has some weight to it. And again, how this reflects, just no pun intended, on Neir Shabbos is also an interesting question to keep in mind. The Rush might possibly be grouped with Rashi. Again, everything is a little bit questionable. The Rush has a comment that other Rishonim have as well, which might be the flip side of what Rashi is saying. In a way, it's a little bit easier to understand. What is the Rush? You saw the Rush? It's in Vav. The Rush is concerned, is that what?
It's to be connected to Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash.
Well, that's also, it's an additional point. But relevant to this, that that's a fair comment to make, but relevant to this, that the Rush says that we're worried that Haroe Yomer Letzorcho Idlik, right? That whoever sees him doing this is going to think he does it for his own purposes. So in a sense, that's possibly the same thing as Rashi is saying, right? That we want a clear divider between the mitzvah candle and a non-mitzvah candle. But it's a little bit more understandable in terms of the issue we were talking about a second ago, that maybe what the Rush is saying is, it's not that you need a hecker, you need to be constantly reminded that it's not. But you can't be pushed in the other direction. You can't have any indication that it's not a Ner Shal Mitzvah, and that it's a personal candle. So it's just the flip side of Rashi, but it doesn't have that same question that we said a second ago, that to actively do something that contradicts its mitzvah status, that's what we don't want. Right?
Isn't that fixing your hacker problem?
Right, that's what I mean. So it's an easier version of Rashi. That Rashi, who seems to be saying you need to have a positive sign, it's hard to see how it does that, but maybe what Rashi means is you can't, or maybe at least the way the Rush says it, is you can't have a negative contradiction to its mitzvah status. And the Beis Yosef, if you had a chance to see, the Beis Yosef points out, he thinks that would have some halacha l'maaseh ramifications, the Prima Gadim takes it further, and they write, for example, and this we'll try to discuss as we go through these reasons, how they impact potential halachic implications. So if you say that it's about people should think you do it for yourself, so then they say, for example, the Beis Yosef says, Tashmish shal aroi, or shal, that's not shal gnai. If it's a temporary usage, just for a second you want to use it, and it's not something that's bizoy, which presumably he's adding because of the other factor of bizoy mitzvah. So if it's something that's a mechubedik usage, that's just for a second, so then you wouldn't necessarily have a problem using it. And maybe, as the Prima Gadim says, so then maybe also to learn for a minute by the candles, Tashma Shel Mitzvah, like Talmud Torah, would be permitted if it's very brief. If it's not, you're sitting there all night having night seder by them, so then maybe that could be permitted if that's really the issue. Do you have a comment? Okay, so that's another possibility. What other possibilities do we see? Okay, so far we've mentioned, we haven't really gotten into Bizui Mitzvah, we just mentioned that it exists. We'll come back to that. We've mentioned Hecker and Haroa. What other major issue is there? What other major position is brought up by Rishonim? Yes? Right, very good. So the Ran and the Rashba add that perhaps the issue here is, and also be sure you've seen that some of the Rishonim bring a couple of opinions, so it's again hard to assign any one Rishon to any one view, but a view that's mentioned in the Ran and the Rashba has at least two explanations. But one of the possibilities is that we are modeled here after the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. So the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, since that couldn't be used, speaking vaguely here, so it sounds like that's the Isser here also. Yes, sir?
Do we derive other halachos from the...
So then very good. So that's also a big question. So if we're going to make this model, if we're going to connect this to the Beis HaMikdash menorah, so then how consistent do we have to be? And because we know that there are other cases where it's going to break down. And first of all, so we've already discussed the question of Kavsa Zakukla, and we saw that it seems to be that the Beis HaMikdash Kavsa Zakukla, and for us the menorah Kavsa Ein Zakukla. So certain cases, certain details are clearly different. Hadlakos and mitzvah, we'll get up to that. We'll see to what extent it matches or doesn't match the Beis HaMikdash. The Pnei Yeshua here asks, if this is really the issue, then why don't we insist on Shemen Zayis for our menorahs? How far do we have to go? Now, without getting into all the depth of that sugya, there's probably a quick chiluk one could make. One has to do with the style of the hadlaka, and the other has to do with the essence of what's there, the reality of what's there, that maybe the way we light it and the details of how we do it doesn't have to model after the Beis HaMikdash, but the existing candles somehow do have to mimic the Beis HaMikdash, but we need to get into that a little bit more depth to see if we understand that fully. Now there's another issue here that, as we mentioned, all of these different positions have ramifications for the practical details of what it means not to use the Hanukkah candles. So for example, we just saw a minute ago that if we say that it's a bad hacker, so then maybe temporary usage is okay. It's one example of how it would affect things. So one of the issues that the Rishonim address while they talk about these reasons is they're answering another question. What question are they answering? It has to do with Chavbez and Merav. And it has to do with... Right, so what about the Hartzell's Mos?
Why is it Usser?
Right, why is it Usser, or why do we have to be told that it's Usser? Right, or the question could be asked in either direction. But if we do Haskin, like Ruzera in our Gemara, that Hishtamshus Bener is Usser, okay, so then the sick is over. Why are we starting over a month later and saying, oh, by the way, you know what? You can't count your money by the candles either. So the Rishonim are interested in figuring out why we need both statements. Under the assumption, we all come from a framework nowadays that we paskin like Ruzeira, right? Especially because the one text we for sure all know is Aneir Salalu, which tells us very clearly, Ein lanu rishus l'shtamesh b'hem. So if we assume that that's the halacha l'maisa, so why do we need a sugya telling us that, oh, by the way, you can't count coins by it either? So most Rishonim feel there's an answer to that question. Right, what kind of answers do they give? Yosef?
So far, you can be very far from it.
All right, maybe there's not an obvious link. You're not necessarily standing by the candles. Or it's very light. Is this really a usual expression of Tamshish Kal? It's a very light type of usage. This isn't really such a direct dependence on the candles. So maybe this Gemara is a Chiddush L'Chumra. Gemara Chav Beis Ben Aleph. It's a Chiddush L'Chumra, that even when you accept that you're not allowed to use the candles, you could have thought that you could still count your coins by them. So the Gemara says, nope, even that you can't do. There's one major Rishon who feels you can't really reconcile these two. What am I talking about? That's right, the Balamor, right? The expert on topics of life, the Balamor. So he writes that essentially there's a contradiction between these Gemaras because of that point that we just made. That if we really paskin like Rav Zeira, then it would come out that there's absolutely no need to be told that you can't count coins by the Hanukkah candle. That would be self-evident. That's a redundant Gemara. So therefore, the Gemara on Chavezim and Aleph, Rav Asi's opinion, says the Balamor, in a unique view that most of the other Rishonim disagree with, these sugyas are opposed to each other. Rav Zeira and Rav Asi are arguing. That according to the Balamor, Rav Asi says, no, there is no general isser to use the Hanukkah candles. There's only an isser like Hartzos Mos, or whatever, Bizwe Mitzvah, something like that. That's a problem. But without Bizwe Mitzvah, there isn't a general isser. In other words, he assumes, and he actually paskins like this, the Balamor actually paskins like this view, that we don't accept Rav Zeira, that there's a general isser l'shtamish b'orah, and we only accept the later view of Rav Asi, that there's a specific isser which seems to be connected to Bizui Mitzvah. But without Bizui Mitzvah, we don't necessarily have an isser. Now, in the middle of saying that, to get to that point, it's a very complicated Balamor. But to get to that, he basically comments on the opinion he's rejected. Because he also introduces here the issue of patterning after the Beis HaMikdash. And he says that the view of Aser L'shtamish L'ora is because of that. Because the Shemen and the Psilos in the Beis HaMikdash were Aser Bahana, so that's why you have a position that says Aser L'shtamish L'ora. But such a position would lead you to the conclusion that absolutely everything is off the table. And therefore, we have no need for the Chafezim and Aleph. So if a Beis HaMikdash Aleph is telling us a different position, and that's how we pass it, that only Bizui Mitzvah related things are a problem. Okay, everyone follow that path of the Balamor?
So are we grouping it with around the Rashba or no?
So yes and no, because on the one hand, the position of us with Shabbos La'ora,
his reasoning is sort of
right, is like around the Rashba, but he doesn't conclude that that's what actually drives practical halacha. But there's another reason not to fully group them. And we'll talk about that more in a second. Okay, so let's just say the other views. But your question is an important question. Should the Balamor be grouped with the Ran of the Rashba? There seems to be some major differences. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But what other views do we see? So we saw, okay, Bizui Mitzvah. Some of the Rishonim invoke that as a reason, which does seem to emerge from the Gemara and Chafezim and Aleph. And other Rishonim have another phrase, which may or may not be the same thing. You know what I'm talking about? Hutzul mitzvah. That if you have an item, and this is very much a sukkah sugya, maybe we'll have time tomorrow to expand on this a little bit more. But if you have an item that is set aside for a mitzvah purpose, and it's very much relevant to a sukkah, so we find that we're not allowed to use it for other things. That it's muktzah. And we'll discuss, a lot to say about this, does that mean muktzah v'shabbos in the yontif sense, as some of the Rishonim seem to see it? Or does that mean even when it's not shabbos in yontif? It's off limits. It's only able to be used for the mitzvah. And is that basically the same thing as bizui mitzvah? Are we saying that something is for a mitzvah can't be used for anything else? And that's what hooks from Rasvasa means. So we'll have to discuss that. There's a lot to say about that. Are these two different ways of saying the same thing? Do they have the same halachic implications? And by the way, another sugya that we'll probably also throw in tomorrow morning is this also then addresses the question, this is how you get to the issue which we've already said we'll talk about tomorrow, about the oil after Hanukkah. Does it have the status of Huktzel Mitzvah, so that continues even after the time of the Mitzvah? Well, it's also relevant, an issue that was really introduced in the Afronim, is what is included in this. So there is a famous possible Tumor of the Avnei Nezer, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit tomorrow. Is there any halachic status to the menorah? Where we talk about most of the halachic ramifications. We talk about the candles, the wicks, and the oil. But what about the menorah that we use? Does the menorah have any halachic status? What nafkaminas would there be about the menorah having halachic status or not? You think of any? Sorry?
Material used for menorah.
So could you use a menorah for anything else?
Yes.
That's one possibility.
Do you even need a menorah?
Right. That's the issue that the Avnei Nezer addresses. Do you even need a menorah in the first place? Is there any significance to the menorah in the lighting process? Let's say there's a story about this, we'll discuss later, involving a Rav Soloveitchik and an outspoken Talmud, that maybe if I take a candle and I melt the bottom and put it on the table, that's enough. So is there a din of a kli by Ner Chanukah? So the Avnei Nezer is often quoted as saying there is such a din, it's a big chiddush that he has. If you read the Tshuva inside, we'll talk about it a little bit tomorrow, he's not 100% sure that's the conclusion of Halacha L'maisa, but he does introduce this idea. If you quote one paragraph out of context, he definitely says that, that there is a need to have a kli, that you can't just melt the bottom of the candle and put it on the table. And that essentially is tied in with this sugya, with what is considered to be Huktzel Mitzvah. So is it just the wicks and the oil, or is it the menorah as well? Is that all part of a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? So we'll have to figure out a little bit. Yes, Mr. Yisrael.
Wouldn't putting the candle and melting it onto the desk or table turn that into a plate?
That's an interesting question also. Only if you come onto the position that you need to clean in the first place. But then if you're saying that, would it asterisk bahana, or is there, would it satisfy the need for a kli? So it's hard to say that it satisfied the need for the kli, because it's there already, it's serving its own purpose. So to whatever extent the kli, especially if it's the wall, let's say if it's the windowsill, which is just a part of the house, so to say if there's a requirement of a kli, it's going to serve that purpose, a little bit hard to, a little bit hard to imagine. But again, this whole notion that there is such a din, that's a chumrah the Avnei Nezer has, the Avnei Nezer possibly has. And he brings different rayas from different gemaras, but part of it is this issue: would the muktzah status apply to the menorah as well? Is that a kli of the mitzvah? So we have to figure out: is bizui mitzvah and huktzel mitzvah, so are they the same thing or not? It's an interesting question, also. So is this different from sukkah? We'll have to discuss this. There are some svarim that raise the question that when it comes to sukkah, we're pretty sure that there is such a concept of huktzel mitzvah. So is Hanukkah different that we have to ask the question? Why shouldn't we say, okay, we know there's a rule by sukkah, I can't use the walls of a sukkah for anything else. Well, of course, the same rule applies to Hanukkah. Or maybe this is not actually the same application. That's how some say that it could be that when we talk about using something, we would mean in a more active sense. We have to actually pick it up and use it. And the usage here, where you're not moving anything, you're certainly not consuming anything, it's not clear if that would even enter into the same kind of category as we find prohibited in the context of sukkah. There's a famous pasha, which they address this way as well. Again, this helps us get into the sukkah spirit a little bit. But the Oni Yatif has a tshuva, Simon Memtes, where he talks about the question, if we have a prohibition to use the sukkah for anything other than a mitzvah. So he discusses the fact that we know that if it's raining, so we say you're patur to sit in the sukkah, and the Gemara says that you're called a hedgehog if you continue to sit in the sukkah in the rain. So the Oni Yontif raises the question, why don't we say that beyond all that, it's asur? Because if there's no chiyuv to sit in the sukkah in the rain, so now, even though you'd rather be in your house if it's raining, because you'll be completely protected from the rain, but if you're outside, anyway, you'd rather be in the sukkah, because the sukkah will protect you a little bit from the rain. So if we say there's no mitzvah, so what right do you have to sit in the sukkah in the rain? Aren't you considered to be benefiting from the sukkah? Shelo b'makom mitzvah. He also asks, what about women? We talked about last week about mitzvah seisha as man grama and women volunteering. So if they're not obligated in mitzvah sukkah, so maybe we should say that a woman's not allowed to sit in the sukkah because she'll benefit from the shade and the protection from the rain. And it's not b'makom mitzvah, isn't that the hadar from the sukkah? So that's the question. And the Gantif asks, and many explain that's not called that kind of hana. We're not talking about taking a plank out of the wall and using it as a baseball bat. That for sure would be a net problem. But to say, to leave it standing the way it is, and you happen to get a benefit from it, it's probably not in the category of the type of hana that we would prohibit. So for somebody who's not obligated to say the sukkah, whether because it's a seisha as mangrum or because it's raining and nobody in that area is obligated, it's not necessarily the same kind of hana. So you might say here too, that even if we were to say that sukkah and chanukah are treated exactly the same thing, maybe the type of hana that we're talking about here, where the candles stay in their place and nobody touches them and nobody affects them in any way, maybe if that was a comparable usage in the case of sukkah, we wouldn't even offer it anyway. So that's another thing we'll have to figure out in terms of bizui mitzvah slash chupsul mitzvah. So is there a direct parallel to be drawn between sukkah and chanukah?
Is it just because it's passive, it's not considered?
It's basically passive, but it's more than that. You know, it doesn't change the form of the item in any way. You don't lift it up. There's nothing actually being diverted from its usage. It's not. It's a lot of ways in which it's arguably a non-type of hana. So you have to figure out to what extent is that so significant. So also to note, what Yosef was saying before, when Rashi talks about Heker, is Rashi saying the same thing as Bizwe Mitzvah or not? Sounds like he's saying something different, and the Sfarim point out some nafkaminas. Why would Rashi not talk about Bizwe Mitzvah? Because from Chav Beis and Aleph, it sounds like there is a concern of Bizwe Mitzvah. So why does Rashi not talk about that? Or why does Rashi feel he has to give a different reason of a Heker? So the Pnei Yeshua suggests that maybe the issue is that the question of, let's say, something like Talmud Torah, right? The Rishonim discuss, and the Rishonim have different approaches. If you see, for example, the Meiri and others, whether a Tashmish Shel Mitzvah is considered to be a Bizoi Mitzvah. We don't have an obvious answer to that question. If you're using the item for a different mitzvah, is that considered to be a Bizoi Mitzvah? So let's say if one were to think that it's not, so Rashi maybe wants to address that issue. The Rashi wants to tell you that in terms of a Tashmish Shel Mitzvah, it's not necessarily a problem, but in terms of a Heker, that's something to worry about. Like we saw before, we mentioned at the very beginning, that maybe learning briefly is not a problem, because it's a Tashmish Shel Mitzvah, but learning B'kvias would be a problem. So that's maybe what Rashi wants to address. The Beis HaLevi has an interesting point here. We mentioned before, again, the comments of the Beis HaLevi that are printed in a Sefer on Chumash. So the Beis HaLevi says, you know what's the major nafkamina between the reason of Rashi and the reason of the Ran and the Rashba? This is a very practical issue. Who does the Yisr apply to? Who is subject to this prohibition of benefiting from Neres Chanukah? You see how it's going to emerge? Because if the concern is Bizui Mitzvah, presumably everyone has a prohibition to use anyone's Chanukah candles for anything else. But if it's about one's mitzvah, the one's trying to fulfill the mitzvah and not confuse that at all, so presumably the Isser only applies to the one lighting. So that might be a significant difference.
Why? I can't ruin your lighting by using your lights?
Presumably not. You know, if I'm, especially since it's a passive kind of usage, but, the more so to put those points together. But yeah, if I fulfill my mitzvah and somebody happens to walk past my house and decide he wants to start reading next to my Hanukkah candles, so then that's his fault. He's doing the wrong thing.
So
but my...
The Russians still have her the other way. How is another passerby?
Right, because the other passerby is going to know that he didn't put the candles there, presumably. It's not his house.
Although it's not his house, but he won't know that the original guy made it, it's not the candle.
Yeah, well, how will he know what the candle for? If I have a candelabra outside my house, you don't know why I put it there. But if somebody from the street walks past my house and reads by the candelabra outside my door, so then that's not going to tell you anything about why it's there. It's going to tell you what he's doing with it. So that's his assumption. So there is a beautiful sefer is written by one of the Rashi Yeshiva of Lakewood, and we'll mention him more in a second. But just to mention right now one thing that he says. So Rav Yerucham Olshan, one of the Rashi Yeshiva in Lakewood, is a beautiful sefer on Pesach and another one on Hanukkah called the Yerach L'Mo'adim. So he points out that he thinks there's a raya for that concern of the Beis Halevi from Haneiros Halalu. Because what do we say? Haneiros Halalu Anachnu Madlikim or Anu Madlikim V'ein Lanu Rishus L'Hikim Meshbanu. So he thinks that maybe that's reflective of what the Beis Halevi is saying, that if the Isser is some type of a Lipsorcho Hidlik type of concern, so yeah, we are lighting this menorah, so therefore we do not have permission to use it. But maybe somebody else does. He has a few other diukim and there is halalu that we'll mention in a second. Because he has a whole essay, and Rav Osner has an essay about this also. Rav Osner, you're familiar with that name because of the author of the Shailos and Shuvos, Shevet Halevi. There's also a dedicated volume called the Shevet Halevi on Hanukkah, where he talks about this. Where it gets to the issue now, well, that we've laid out the positions. So let's go back to Jonathan's question from a second ago. Should the Ran and the Rashba and the Meiri, should they be considered to be, I'm sorry, and then Balamor, should, the Meiri talks about it though, should the Balamor and the Ran and the Rashba, should they be considered one view? Right? They all invoke the idea that the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash is the model. So are they all saying the same thing? So set aside for a second the fact that the Balamor paskins against it and the other Rishonim paskin like it. But there's another big issue here. That why is it that the Balamor was convinced that he had a bomb kasha? Right? The Balamor said, because it's like the menorah, so therefore asul l'shtamish, and that would for sure include counting coins. So the only way to have anything make sense is that the counting coin sugya is against this, and that's what we paskin. No general isser, just counting coins. Because the kasha is such a bomb kasha. It can't be. Clearly, if we're going to say isser l'shtamish la'ora, like the Beis HaMikdash, we would ask for counting coins. And apparently the Ran and the Rashba, they weren't so convinced that that was a problem. Right? The Ran and the Rashba, they say it's like the Beis HaMikdash. And still, you could have thought that counting coins was mutter. And you have a chiddush that that's also us. So somehow they see it as less powerful as the Balamor, than the Balamor. The Balamor said, wow, this is going to knock out everything. And the Ran and the Rashba didn't think it was so absolute. So it seems to be, as he points out, and Rav Osner points out, that if you look at their language specifically, they don't say exactly the same thing. So first of all, the Ran and the Rashba, they mention the menorah, while the Balamor mentions the shemen and the psilim, the psilos, the oil and the wicks. And also, if you look at the language of how they say the prohibition, so as we just mentioned, the Balamor sees it as a very absolute prohibition. And the Ran and the Rashba, if you look at their language, look inside, you see it's a little bit less absolute. It doesn't have the same type of impact as the way the Balamor puts it. So he assumes that we're talking about two different things. That the Balamor is saying that it would have meant that we instituted, Chazal instituted, that the oil and the wicks of our contemporary menorahs is the same as the oil and the wicks of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, it's Asur Bahamah, it's Me'ila. While the Ran and the Rashba are saying something different. The Ran and the Rashba are saying that this is patterned like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, it makes sense that we would create an Isser to make it similar to the Beis HaMikdash menorah. But not in the same memeila kind of sense that it's kodesh and therefore it's asur bahana. So it does seem meduyak in their language if you look at it. And as he points out, and as others point out also, he says that Binyan Shlomo has this point as well, that maybe this is meduyak and also in Haneiros Halalu. Why? Because what word in Neiros Halalu seems to support this view of the Baal HaMor? Kodesh. Right? Haneiros Halalu. Kodesh. So it says, Benyamin Shlomo, it says, the Erech HaMo'adim, that's what the Baal HaMor is getting at, that there's Kedusha in these candles, and therefore, Memele comes out that there is an Isser to use them. Then, parenthetically, says, okay, but then if you're going to pay such attention to the Nusach, so then why do we then say, V'ein lanu reshus l'hishtamesh b'hem? We don't have permission. It should be more obvious that Kodesh is Me'ila. So he suggests that that ties into Reb Chaim that says that Me'ila is a type of Gezel. So it's basically saying that it comes out that you don't have permission to steal from the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the language means. But this phrase of Kodesh, he thinks is very influential. It sounds like the Haneiros Halalu is essentially saying, like the Baal HaMor. Hi.
It goes back to one of our original questions. If you say that you're misafim, like the Petilos from Shabbat is in the Mikdash, then how can we use all the Shemanim Petilos to go connect the Mishnah then on Shabbos?
How can we use all the ones that we couldn't use for the Beis
HaMikdash? We already said that it's much to use all of the Shvach oils and everything.
I mean, the ones that wouldn't have worked for the Beis HaMikdash. Right, so again, it comes to the same question that was mentioned at the beginning, like you said, that how far are we taking this comparison? Right? Are we saying that it has to be practiced the same once it's lit? Are we saying that the lighting has to be the same? Are we saying the materials have to be the same? Where are we drawing the line?
Even if we say it's dafka on the psilos and shemen, which is his point, then right. We're still in trouble.
Right, except that you could still say, yeah, maybe, or you could still say that no, that whatever you use, maybe we could have a more expansive vision of what you could use. But once you use it, then like the Beis HaMikdash, we've been asur b'hana, so here too it's asur b'hana, in a very broad and absolute sense. So the Kodesh word is powerful. But the Stechemed comments on this. The Stechemed says he doesn't think that it excludes the view of the other Rishonim, that it excludes the Rav and the Rashba. But still, once you say, again, tying it together with Bizui Mitzvah and other things, that creates a basically a kind of sanctity that we view this as off limits. That's what Kodesh means, that it's a set aside for a mitzvah. It doesn't have to mean the same type of Kodesh as the Beis HaMikdash. But the language is somewhat powerful. And it's interesting to consider in this context. Parenthetically, we'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow, so there is a machlokas, bizwe mitzvah, whether it's a concept or ice or the rabbanim. And it's a little bit of a funny question to ask, because you think the mice, it's kind of intuitive. Right? So do we say it's a rabbanim, is that going to make much of a difference? Presumably, to disgrace a mitzvah is a clear issue, kind of in a self-evident sense. So if you call it the rabbanim, we call it the ice, is that going to matter? So maybe it matters in terms of what types of activities it offers, so we'll have to see a little bit how that plays out. We'll continue with that. We'll pick up that point a little bit tomorrow. But in any event, so this is what he maintains, this is what others maintain as well, that this is how Rav Osner writes in a shorter form in his Sefer Shevet HaLevi, that essentially the Baal HaMor is saying something fundamentally different than what the Ran and the Rashba is saying. They both invoke the Beis HaMikdash, but the Baal HaMor is saying it's Mamish HaHekdesh and it's Me'ila, and that's what we mean. And the Ran and the Rashba are not going that far. They're not ready to say that. If you want to continue being Medayik in Haneiros Halalu, so if you want this year when you light the candles, you can tell your family you wrote a whole parish on Haneiros Halalu and you can discuss every word. So I saw in one Sefer, the Sefer Chanukah Savram, it's a collection of articles, the Sefer's a carbon for someone, it's a collection of articles about Hanukkah. So somebody there wrote, everybody, Shimshon Ravitz wrote, that why do we say, V'chol Shmonas Yimei HaChanukah Elu? Why do we emphasize that? Oh, you would have thought that there's an Israel, L'shtamish Ba'orah, four of the nights of Hanukkah? What's the Chiddush of saying, V'chol Shmonas? What possible svara would there be to distinguish between some of the nights and other nights? So one point he mentions is we see the Rishonim did consider the possibility that maybe it should be mutter for Neiros Shabbos. So maybe we're coming to exclude that possibility. We're saying that even the Shabbos of Hanukkah still usser also. Or he says even more creatively, we mentioned the other day, the Beis Yosef's Kasha about the why is it that we light eight nights of candles, why don't we just light seven, because one was non-miraculous. So some of the answers he gives is that one of the candles is for something else. Seven of them are miraculous and one is for something else. So this author suggests that if the Isser L'shtamesh Ba'orah is a function because the Nais was done with the menorah, maybe only seven of the nights is because of the nace that was done with the menorah. So maybe the first night you would think it's mutter. So comes Haneris Alalu and says, oh, chol shmonis mechanikah, it's still prohibited. So there's a lot to be medayik in this tefillah we don't pay enough attention to. So this year you'll tell your family whatever your word means and you'll comment on the nafkah mitzvah.
Hi. What's its source then, though? Nice. What's the source
of the Divrei Sofer? So it is Chazalitic, but not on the same level as the Divrei Sofer. Masechta Sofer. Right. So it's one of the Masechta Ketanis, so it does come from Chazal, but not in our straight Shas kind of sense. And of course, there are different Nuschos a little bit, but the basic text seems to have some reflection of some pretty significant Halacha L'maisa Nafka Minins. Rav Osner in the Sefer Sheva Halevi, he notes also that you could ask the question, so what about other types of usages? So let's say, for example, let's say somebody, certainly in the earlier era, in this era as well, it's certainly easy to imagine, in a winter time setting where you don't have heating in the house, so what about sitting next to the menorah so you'll be warm? Or what about drying your hands by holding them next to the flames? Is that also awesome? So he thought that it's pashut that it is. It's pashut that when we say asur l'shtamish, we don't mean only using it for light, we mean also using it for heat. And he starts off saying, he says, for sure, according to the Balamor's position, that it's about Kedusha, so lo mi boy, Balamor, there's no question, you wouldn't even ask this issue. But he thinks even according to the other Rishonim's positions that they mention, it also emerges that this is also the case. Hi.
And that's for the two reasons that we had on the Rajma, right? Either because any type of use, if I'm taking it, takes away from the mitzvah, or even if I'm taking it for another mitzvah, it also takes away from the mitzvah.
Right, that's what it seemed like. In general, halacha l'maisa, the way, for example, you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, the way the poskim in general, so they say, according to some of these reasons, so if you're sitting at a distance, it's not evident that you're really using the candles, so there are bases based on some of these reasons to be makel. The minig is lahachmer. The minig is we take a very strict view in terms of anything that looks like using Neres Chanukah. And it's another thing I want to do tomorrow, go into some of the halacha l'maisa positions. Prima Gadim, for example, writes, we'll talk about some more tomorrow, that if the room is dark and you walk into the room and you don't want to trip, so you don't want to close your eyes, it's not mechuyev to close your eyes as you walk into a room because the only light is Neres Chanukah. There is a limit at some point where the passive benefits you're getting are not considered to be usage. But in general, intentional usage of Neres Chanukah, even though some of these reasons do give us basis lachel, so the minhag for the most part is to be machmir on most things that look like any kind of usage of Neres Chanukah. He does mention Rav Osner in his piece, though, after he says that it's pashut that heating yourself by the Chanukahs is aser, by the Chanukah candles is aser. Says, what about, says, nowadays the Medrash candles, they put these fancy smelling oils in them, so that when they burn, they also release a nice odor, nice aroma. I think if it's good, it's called an aroma. So why is that permitted to enjoy that? See, he assumes, yes, he has a raya from the Gemara also about the Sukkos, about the Esrog and Hadassim, that when we say Huktzul Mitzvaso, so that means whatever the item is used for, so then you can't have that kind of usage for your own benefit. But if it's not what the item is in general set aside for, so then that's not going to be hishtamshus. So here, the smell is not really a part of a candle. A candle is there for light and maybe heat. But the smell is a tangential usage, so to get hanah from the smell of the candle doesn't think is an issue. Set aside from the question in general whether a smell is considered hanah. It's a whole sugi of psachim about whether hanah is considered to include smelling, but let's say that it is for a second. It's not necessarily this issue in terms of huktzul mitzvaso. So I think it was Michael Ephraim Jonathan, does that sound right? Yes.
Would you have to make a bracha on the aroma?
So that's a good question also in terms of what types of aroma that has an ikker. Right, so there that you would. Right, but there again the Gemara says, Gemara talks about the esrog and it says that esrog is not for the purposes of smelling, so therefore it's not an issue of huktzul mitzvaso to smell the esrog. But then we'll maybe talk about that a little more tomorrow. Hi.
So then why did you say you couldn't dry your hands with the heat?
Because heat is something a candle is used for. Now, a candle is there for light and for heat.
Oh, candle in general?
Right. I think it means a candle in general. You know, like an esrog, for example, an esrog is for eating, even though the mitzvah doesn't involve eating. So if somebody's going to eat his esrog, that would be a problem. That smelling an esrog is a tangential type of usage. Like a hadassah is different. People don't eat hadassah and they smell them. So some types of plants are things that people eat, and therefore to eat them would be a diversion from the mitzvah, and some are made for smelling, and then smelling becomes more of a purpose. Adam?
Smelling, taking an esrog and making it into the Korah.
After sukkahs. Right. So that's also part of the issue we'll have to get to tomorrow, that there seems to be a big difference in terms of what you're allowed to do after the mitzvah when it comes to, let's say, sukkahs, and when it comes to Hanukkah. That'll be a topic we'll have to get to tomorrow. So just to add one last thought, then we'll quickly review what we talked about, then we have to go to Mincha. So I think, I don't know if this is consistent with any of the views of the Rishonim, but I think there is also another element here, which might be what they're all saying, or might be what none of them are saying. Again, we're not 100% sure how to group different views, but it could be that we know that the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah is that it's supposed to serve as a siman of something. And the Persumanisa, the Nes, the whole story. So if it's meant to serve as a siman, perhaps that means it's davka, not a usage candle. But there are different types of candles in the world. There are candles that attract attention, you should just see them, and there are candles that you use to see. And the whole purpose of the Neros Chanukah is that they're supposed to be there to send a message, rather than, you know, have a neon sign. Neon sign is meant to read the letters, it's not meant to use to be able to see by it. So we want to emphasize that the purpose of Neros Chanukah is davka to see. If you want to get a little bit more hashkafic about it, maybe we'll find a time to expand on this. I'll just say in a mysterious way now, that maybe as opposed to normal candles, the purpose of Neros Chanukah is to see what is not there. And the purpose of normal candles is to see what is there. And therefore, we don't want to use the Neros Chanukah to see what is there. That would contradict their fundamental purpose. And I'll leave that as a little bit of a clue to a hashkafic discussion of the purpose of Neros Chanukah. But maybe that's built into the halacha, that to use it as a seeing by candle would contradict its function as a candle that's meant to be seen in of itself and not necessarily to illuminate for any other purposes. So, now just to quickly chazer, so first of all, before we chazer, we did say, so what are we leaving for tomorrow? So we'll say a little bit more about the Huxley Mitzvah, so Bizui Mitzvah relationship and its relevance to Sukkah, and then we want to talk about the major machlokas and Rishonim about what happens to oil after Hanukkah is over, or maybe even during Hanukkah, what happens after the half hour, and are you allowed to extinguish after a half hour if you want to? It's a major machlokas Rishonim. We'll talk about that. Right, our whole sugya of Kavsa was, let's say it happens anyway, but are you allowed l'chatchila to do it after the time is over? So we'll talk about that, and also Shamash. So we have a couple of major topics to try to get in tomorrow, but hopefully we'll finish that, and if not, spill over a little bit to Wednesday, but certainly before Yantif, we hope to have all that done. So what do we talk about today? So we talked about what are the various reasons and ramifications of the Yisrael l'shamash l'oro. So Rashi, that it's there to be a hacker, we raise various questions. How could something you don't do serve as a positive hacker? Maybe that's a way of getting to the Shamish whole discussion. The Rush is a little bit more of an understandable version of that by saying that if you do use it, it's going to sound like you're using your Litzorcho, and that's going to contradict the mitzvah purpose. And halachic ramifications, the Beis Yosef and Rebbetzin point out that therefore a Arai dika usage that's not a bizoyan should be mutter, like Permagadim says, like learning, as long as it's not bikvias. And then the Ron the Rashba says that the issue is like the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, and they explain based on that that a light usage like counting money would have been mutter were it not for the later Gemara that says that it's not. The Balamor didn't accept that explanation. The Balamor says they're incompatible, and the Gemaras are incompatible, and that if there was an Yisrael Shdamish La'oru, it would be because it's like the Beis Mikdash and Asur Bahana, and that would Asur everything, so therefore, B'meila, we don't paskin like that, we paskin like the next Gemara, but it's just a concern of Bizui Mitzvah, such as counting coins. And then we talked also about the other possible interpretations. the question of Bizui Mitzvah and the question of Hupsalim Mitzvah also, the question are those the same or not? And we talked a little bit about how would this compare to Sukkah? Is it different than Sukkah, at least in Havamina stage, or maybe Sukkah, it's not really different, it's just that the usage is different. That if you have a comparable usage when it comes to a Sukkah that doesn't divert the Sukkah walls for anything else and isn't visible, etc., etc., maybe it also would have been not such a simple question. You would need a Sukkah to tell you. And you mentioned the Kasha the Yonah Yantif, how is it mutter to stay in a Sukkah when it's raining, or if it's mitzvah say shazman grom and women are potter, how is it mutter to ever be in a sukkah when it's not 100% obligatory? So then that could be relevant to that question as well. And then we talked about this issue of whether the Ran of the Rashba and the Balamor are really saying the same thing. Clearly on some level they're differentiated, and we mentioned the explanation of the Afronim that they are significantly different, that the Balamor really means it's actual Kodesh, it's Me'ilah, it's a whole thing, just like the oil in the wicks of the Beis HaMikdash, and the Ran of the Rashba saying something else, that you patterned it after the Ran of the Beis HaMikdash, so it makes sense that it should be usher to use it, just like we don't use things for the Beis HaMikdash, but in a significantly softer sense. And then we mentioned the various diukim in the Haneris Halalu that might be relevant. The Beis HaLevi's point that a difference between some of these reasons would be whether it's this or applicable to everyone or just to the owner of the mitzvah. So the language of Haneris Halalu says that Anu Madlikim and Lanu Rishas may be significant in that sense. The usage of the word Kodesh was taken by some, such as the Binyan Shlomo, to be very significant, to really point the finger to the Bala Moris position. The Stechemet thought it wasn't such a slam dunk. And a little bit the question of Ein Lanu Rishas, do we say it like that? Does that mean it's less than absolute Kedusha? Or does that say something about the nature of Me'ilah and Hektish? We discussed that a little bit. And also the question of why Chol Shmonas Mechanika, what's the Chiddush of Chol Shmonas? Wouldn't that be pretty obvious that we wouldn't divide it up in the middle? And the two suggestions that were offered in that Sefer, either to show you that even on Shabbos it's still Aser, or that even Beis Yosef's question that all 8 nights are Aser, even if you think that one of them was not because of the nace of the menorah, it's still going to apply all those nights. And then we mentioned the Halach Lamaisa, the question that the Shevet HaLevi discusses, that should we extend this Isser to other types of usages other than looking, like let's say to heat oneself by the candles. He thinks it's Pashat that it's Asur, for sure according to Balamora, but even according to the others as well. But smelling, if you happen to have aromatic candles, so then he thinks that that would be less problematic, that setting aside the question of whether a reich is considered to be a hana, but this candles are not meant for smelling, it's a secondary thing, so to smell would not be a violation of a huxla mitzvah, so type of idea, and he brought a raya from the Gemara about the sukkah and hadassah. Okay, so we will stop here, we'll continue tomorrow, and head to the next 4 minutes.